Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Got another dude!
Hey!
What's better than this? Guys being dudes.
Dudes to the right, dudes to the left, stuck in the middle with you.
Got another dude!
Heisman Trophy, Bronco Nagurski Award. Ultimate dudes.
Got another dude.
O-line U, bunch of dudes.
Lot of dudes.
Yeah! Another dude in the house.
Welcome to the Lot of Dudes podcast, presented by Fourth and Dude and Boston College 24/7, Season 2, Week 13. Boston College's football's dreams of a 9-3 season were officially tomahawk chopped on Saturday as the Eagles blew an 8-point fourth quarter lead to lose to the Seminoles by a score of 22-21. Florida State keeps their 37-year bowl appearance streak alive, while the Maroon and Gold dropped to 7-4 on the year and are officially in danger of another 7-6 season. On today's episode, we'll recap the disaster of a game, debate vastly different viewpoints on the temperature of Coach Adazio's seat, and preview our chances of bouncing back versus Q's next weekend.
Matt, hello darkness, my old friend. The life has been sucked out of my body. The carriage has turned back into a pumpkin. Steve Adazio 2018 turned back into Steve Adazio pre-2017. However you want to say it, this was a pathetic, backbreaking, painful loss. And all of our dreams about this being a special year have been left on the tarmac in Tallahassee. So we're recording this on a Sunday night, just 24 hours removed, and the pain is not even remotely yet to subside. So hopefully it goes away soon, or else this is going to be a very long Thanksgiving week until we get Q's.
Tell you what, Sunday scaries are at 100 right now. Like you said, the loss still hasn't really even hit us, although they did just release the polls and we're nowhere to be found. So it is starting to hit.
Shoot, that's interesting.
It is starting to hit a little bit from that standpoint. But you talk about, and Coach said it too, just a waste of a golden opportunity, a win that you had to have, and the boys just did not show up. Well, not all the boys, but the vast majority of the boys just didn't have what it takes, didn't have what it took to get by the Seminoles. And here we are. We're seven wins again, and you know, at some point, the ceiling's the roof, Matt.
Yeah, that's very, very eloquently said. I mean, look, at the end of the day, this was a pathetic loss. Period. There's just no other way to put it. Florida State is so bad, and we've said it throughout the year watching their games. You know, they were slowly putting some pieces together, and they do still have a roster full of four and five star talents. So there was the thought that they could put the pieces together, but that was just not the case. They were absolutely horrible all game, yet we somehow, for whatever reason, just always play to our opponent's level, blowing a fourth quarter lead to a team this bad. No excuses anywhere. And again, it speaks to the season. We haven't had an easy game since Holy Cross. Louisville was tied in the second half. Temple, we kept in it. Miami felt like a game we were going to give away. I don't know why it's so hard for us to just, you know, actually be able to step on the throats of our opponents, but if it just were lacking a killer instinct or what it is. But it's, you know, for as many highlights as we've had this year, it's just been really frustrating so many times, and I think this is just the culmination of it all right here.
Yeah, and it'd be one thing, you know, if like we were saying earlier on in the year, if Florida State, you know, we know they have athletes on their team, right? They get, you know, consistently a top five recruiting class, right? It'd be one thing if we had seen development throughout the course of the year, and then they played a good game against us, and it'd be like, you know what? You know, Florida State fell late in our schedule. Taggart got these guys going, and, you know, that's kind of just how it works sometimes. But they were such a bad football team, and to not come out of there with not just a win, but to not blow these guys out, frankly,
easy, convincing win. Yes, exactly.
Was pretty disappointing. And you touch on a couple of things, but there's something about us not being able to go on the road specifically. And I think this is, you know, our fourth game in a row where we've gone on the road and just laid a complete egg in the first half, right? And, you know, we did it against NC State. We did against Virginia Tech. Don't get me started on Purdue, right? But there's something about And Natasio's a great guy. You know, he's the guy that gets these guys pumped up before games. Everyone's seen the videos at this point, but there's something about these guys that just can't get it going on the road in the first half. Just not even close to showing up.
Yeah, I mean, I think it does start, if we want to talk on the field, because we'll get into the larger coaching discussion shortly, but it does start on the field with Anthony Brown. Like you said, once again, a tale of two halves. He could not hit water from a boat in the first half. Two picks, looked absolutely pathetic, couldn't get a single drive started. You know, we had first and goal at the two, and nothing came of that, which in hindsight would have been nice to just even get 3 points there. But finished with almost 300 yards, looked good for most of the second half, and to be honest, probably did enough to allow us to escape with the win. It should not have been, you know, that borderline. This, like we've said, should have been a game that we, you know, blew them out from the get-go. But I think overall, he did enough to allow us to get the win. But you're right. I don't know what the answer is. At a certain point, it's just we're hitting our head against the wall. I guess, thank God, for what it's worth, Cuse is at home. But it just, it's so frustrating. And, you know, look, we're dealing with 18, 19-year-old kids here, so there obviously is a significant mental aspect to this game, and if it's a hostile environment or whatever it is, but this is something that we need to figure out quickly over the course of the next, you know, whatever, 9 months before we even have a chance next year.
It's specific to Brown, too. I don't know if it's injuries or, you know, the injury he sustained last week against Clemson. I would say that's probably what it was, except for he does this every time, right? So
right.
It probably isn't,
and he had a full,
that.
And he had a full week of practices too, you know? So, I don't think that injury was nearly as bad as everyone thought. And yeah, it's been happening all season.
And it's not even really Jekyll and Hyde anymore. It's Jekyll and then, holy shit, we're going to lose to Florida State here. I'm 3 for 10 for 12 yards midway through the second quarter. I got to get my shit together here. You know, we can pick on the game plan all we want, but I don't care if you have Bear Bryant drawing up the game plan. The way that, you know, his throws were looking, he wasn't going to hit anything. It didn't matter what plays you were drawing up. To his credit, he came out and had an awesome second half, right? But you can't only play half a game against, right, even against a team like Florida State, right? I mean, he had a chance there in the first half to probably put up, I don't know, what, 28 to 35 points. They left so many points. They left so many points on the board in the first half. To only come out of that first half with 7 points, is what did us in. And everyone's talking about the last 5 minutes of the game, everything we could have done differently. And granted, there's things that could have gone differently, but this game was not lost in the last 5 minutes. It was lost in the first 30, in my opinion.
It's a fair point in that we should not have even been in a situation where Adazio has the chance to completely fuck it up down the stretch. But having said that, let's just get right into it. That's obviously the main talking point of this game, and I think rightly so. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's Florida State, and this should have been a game we won by 7 touchdowns. But, you know, it is what it is, and you need to rely on your head coach when you are in these tight situations down the stretch to make the right call. And I don't know your take on this, but flat out, he made the wrong call. I think every metric shows that. He was aggressive all game long. He went for 6 fourth downs, converted 50% of them, yet on the, I'd say, the most, you know, important one of the game with a chance to ice it, 4th and 1. And he was going for it on 4th and 2 and another 4th down short yardage and 6 times. 4th and 1 with the game on the line. And that's when he decides to turtle. So, and this is on the 40-yard line, by the way. And I have some numbers to back all of this up too, which Adazio clearly disagrees with.
Let's talk your numbers, and we can do math all day in a vacuum. And we knew we were going to have a debate about this.
Just to be clear, just before we get into this, you think it was the right decision to punt the football?
I think it's very easy to say after we didn't convert it that it was the right decision. I think at the time, and when I was checking my Twitter timeline, Matt, it was pretty split on what we should do, frankly. And in a vacuum, it's always, the numbers always had to go for it. Anytime you're on, you know, anytime you're in your opponent's territory and it's less than 4th and 3, that's what the numbers say. The numbers are not for a Boston College football team without A.J. Dillon. AJ Dillon's banged up. Would you rather have Anthony Brown having to complete a pass, 4th and 1, with guys in his face? Or are you going to pin these guys back on their 10-yard line? And the defense that's played,
which
extremely,
we didn't do,
the 13, whatever it was, they pinned him back, Matt. And let your defense that's really had maybe one big play given up to that point, you know, trust those guys with 2 minutes to go to not give up a big play. Obviously, in hindsight, you know, Monday morning quarterback, not the right decision. But in real time, yeah, I was pretty split on it, Matt. I did not have confidence we're going to convert that fourth down. I had zero confidence.
Well, first of all, let's get into the actual play call here or the lack of play call. So we have Dylan overused all game. He ran 37 plays and he's nowhere near 100%. He didn't, you know, he got a couple decent runs. I think his, you know, long was in the 15 range or something like that. The combination of Glines, Levy, and Bailey, who have been very strong over the past 4 or 5 weeks, had, I think, a total of 3 carries. So there's an issue in and of itself there that we are running this guy into the ground, getting almost 40 touches, which is a ton for even a healthy guy. But with that, then, to then not have him line up in the backfield, everyone knew when he was in the backfield.
He was banged up. He limped off the field. He wasn't an option at that point.
That's not on that play. He was banged up all game, and we were feeding him. And then we decide on that one to not line him up when we actually want to try to trick them that we're going to run the football. So that, first of all, made no sense to me. Second of all, it's 1 yard. We should be able to trust our offensive line against a bad Florida State.
Did you trust that offensive line the way they were playing in the second half?
To get 1 yard, honestly, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I did.
Agree to disagree then. Even the fourth downs they did convert, Matt. What was it? Two or three of them? Two were controversial, and then the third one, we had to like use our best play in the playbook to do an Anthony Brown rollout to Mikey Walker, who slipped out. That's their best play, I think. I don't think they had another one like that. If they did, then I'd say go for it. But that's not, at least as a fan, I don't know the numbers, but that doesn't feel like a high percentage play to Mikey Walker or whoever. Anthony Brown throwing the ball, and the numbers back it up. That's not a high percentage play to convert that fourth down. And you knew they were going to pass it because they were getting stuffed in the run game. In my mind, it's and I have to go kind of to one extreme here because everyone else is anti-Daz right now, so apologies for that. But at the end of the day, I think it's not that bad of a decision that he made to pin his guys back or to pin Florida State back, who'd shown no offense all game, to trust our defense to make it happen.
So here's the problem, Matt. If we want to talk in a vacuum, I have no problem with that. If this was a one decision that he made in his 5-year tenure that ended up not working out in the way that we would like it to work out in crunch time in a vacuum, fine. I can live with that. The problem here is that this is a pattern. This happens consistently where his late game management decisions cost us the game. The one that jumps out at me is basically the same thing, Georgia Tech in Ireland a couple years ago. Pretty much an identical situation. He had a fourth down. He could have went for it. And his quote was, well, I wanted our defense to be on the field. Pretty much identical, but you could go back every year and there's at least
that, what was it, the 4th and 27? They would have won that game.
But that's the problem, is that they do consistently do that. Well, they have a 74
yard
touchdown
here. Too, I don't disagree with you, but at some point it's an execution problem.
But if it's an execution problem, you as a head coach need to know that.
And all
and
this
not
falls
put
on the head coach, no matter how I spin it. But I'm just saying, you know, I'm arguing the specific point of it's not that egregious to punt the football there.
Right. And again, I don't disagree with you if we're just looking at this specific play. The problem here is the pattern, and that we've seen this for 5 years. And at some point, the reality has set in that this is the ceiling because of his coaching style. And because we're not Alabama, we're not always going to have a 50-point talent advantage. We're going to get ourselves in a 12-game season. We're going to get ourselves into a significant handful of close games. And in those significant handful of close games, he's going to give away more than the average number because of bad tactics. And that's why we are going to always be at this 7, maybe 8 win ceiling. And you're never going to be able to get to that next level of 10 regular season wins. And that to me is what is so frustrating. We've seen it at this point. And look, I'll say this, and I think you'll agree with this, that nobody can deny that overall, I think this hire to this point can be viewed as a success. We were in the absolute dumpster. Things were terrible on the heights with the way Spaziani left it. He brought us back to respectability. He's a great recruiter, a good talent developer, hires phenomenal assistants, good face for the program, face for the school, et cetera. But at the end of the day, what you're judged on is you know, your overall record number. And with his game management, we're just never going to be able to get to that next level.
And you can get on him for a lot of things. And certainly sometimes the way that he uses timeouts and stuff like that. I would say in the list of Addazio things you can get on him for, I don't think that really cracks the top 10, in my opinion. You know,
that's a problem.
Get on him for not being able to recruit and develop a quality quarterback. That's perfectly fine. He can't find a kicker after year 6. Agreed. If you have those two things, we beat him by 40, Matt. And it's not even a discussion at this point.
Okay, but then that's another argument. I'm trying to give him credit for his talent development and his recruiting. So if you're going to knock that down, then what does he have to stand on?
Well, no,
beyond being
a
great face for the program.
90% of the things he's done correctly, and those are two things that he has not. And it's the reason that we don't win close games. I've seen all the stats. I don't disagree.
It's a game manager. He's a horrible game manager.
I agree to disagree on that. I mean,
that's pretty factual.
Yeah, I guess I don't really have a leg to stand on there. I do think though. You know, everyone's get 8 days ago, everyone was saying, oh, Daz is great, coach of the year, whatever. And now all of a sudden, because, you know, a couple things, you know, we lost our quarterback, we're banged up, and, you know, not to, you know, blame injuries as an excuse, right? But it's a fact. And we lost to Clemson, even though we played them tough. And we had a bad game against Florida State. Our cornerback got burned. Our kicker missed a field goal. Everything went wrong that could have. Our quarterback didn't show up for the first three quarters. And that's the position, you know, we find ourselves in. I hate that the entire season, really that the last 6 years, are being boiled down to a single decision that at best is controversial and in my mind is absolutely forgivable. I mean, the defense, I know that the Georgia Tech quote is ridiculous. I want my defense on the field at the end of the game. It's kind of a ridiculous thing to say. But it's true. Our defense played way better than the offense did and has the last, really the whole second half of the season. Our defense
right, but you can't
electric.
Lose the game if the, you can't lose the game if the offense is on the field, period.
Well, the way Brown you know, was throwing those picks, you probably could actually, Matt.
Okay.
But no, I mean, no one could have predicted, although I know we all had that kind of pit in our stomach that something bad was about to happen, but no one could have predicted that. And here's another thing you can get on for is what the hell, and maybe blame Reed, blame whoever, what the hell was that defensive scheme in the 2 minute drill? Get on for that. I think people are missing the point a little bit just because a lot of other things went wrong just besides that.
Again, the reason that everyone is focusing on this one decision, like I said, is just because this happens all the time. Yeah, right. There's
Matt,
a lot of issues.
And you guys are all arguing as if we get the yard, it's an easy yard. What if we don't get it? Then we give them the ball on the 40, and they score.
That's fine.
And then everyone's arguing the other
way.
No, I
disagree because
everyone's
I trust our defense.
Everyone's arguing the other way.
No, because to me, it was a riskless decision the way we trusted our defense. Yeah, I agree that once we punted it, I did not expect them to go 87 yards or whatever it was in 30 seconds, but I also wouldn't have expected them to go 60 yards if we don't get it. So I trusted our defense enough to feel confident either way. So at that point, take the risk and just ice it. Rather than, you know, those bonus 20 yards that you're giving up there. Again, the problem here, and to go to your point about, you know, everyone being so high on him last year or last week, is because the carriage had not turned back into a pumpkin yet. And we were, you know, whatever, 11 games into the schedule, and we had not had that devastating loss yet due to a late game management. That's not to say it was smooth sailing. But I think we'd all agree that necessarily individual game decisions weren't what costed us, certainly not Purdue or Clemson, and probably not NC State either. I think that was just a motivation, guys didn't get off the bus thing. So when we went this far, we said, you know what, maybe the talent is actually winning out here. And he was, by the way, he was being aggressive throughout the course of the year. He was coaching like a different coach. He was, you know, he was being a little bit more creative on offense. He was being more aggressive on fourth downs. So for it to all in one play really just revert to everything that we've hated for, I'll say, the first 3 years of his tenure, 3.5 years of his tenure, that to me, and I think to what so many of us, is impossible to swallow.
And if we had the line that we thought we did, and if we had a healthy Dylan, and we hadn't already been stopped on fourth down twice in that game, I would agree with you. We're a power running football team.
But we also got it three times in that game.
What's that?
We also got a three. I mean, you can say we went for it six times. You can say we got stopped twice, but 3 for 6 is still a good number.
Is it? I mean, that's probably, that feels less than average to me. If you're going for it on fourth down, you would think that you would get it more often than not.
We're 71
Matt,
on the year, but
two of them were like, one was a really bad spot. We got very lucky on that. The other was an Anthony Brown QB sneak that I don't think we probably got either. We weren't getting them, you know, very by a lot, I guess I'll say. And it was clear that our line at that point was overmatched especially by the DN. So what are we going to do? We're going to run up the middle. You know, they were going to stack the box because, you know, we weren't going to throw it, and not successfully, right? I mean, I don't know. It just sucks that this entire season that had so much riding on it, and really the game, which, you know, we obviously, I think in my opinion, right, we had a game plan that would have not just won the game, but we had a game plan drawn up that should have blown them out by 30 points. You talk about all the lost opportunities, and you mentioned the penalties when Dylan got it to the 2 yard line, right? The two Anthony Brown picks, one of them, you know, deep in their territory. You had Colt that missed the field goal. You had that flea flicker that was drawn up, and he had a touchdown to, was it Kobe White that was wide open, middle of the field, 30 yards down, and he did a check down to Jeff Smith. I don't think you can blame Adazio for the, oh, you can, I guess, because everything comes back to him, and he should have, you know, better prepared Anthony Brown to make the right decisions, that type of thing. But at some point, we just executed poorly. And I agree that, you know, the play call is debatable, whatever. But there were so many other opportunities that this game should have been 30 points. It should have been a blowout, and we should have had our backups in there. It's incredible that it got to this point.
Right, and I agree with you. But again, to that point as well, okay, well, it's an execution issue because for whatever reason, you know, the guys aren't playing up to it, whether that's talent development or whatever it is, which I'm trying to put in his corner. At the end of the day, there's no way for him to run from this. This loss to me is he needs to take 100% responsibility for it. I didn't listen to his post game, so I can't speak to whether or not he has done so. But
no, he stood by his decision. He said it was the right move, and I'd do it again because he saw what I saw. He saw that we were not going to convert that fourth down, and maybe statistically it didn't make the most sense in a vacuum, but for this Boston College team, the way that we were playing, we were not going to convert that fourth down. Our defense was playing great. Make them drive 87 yards with 2 minutes to go.
Make them drive 60 with 2 minutes to go and at least give yourself a chance to get that first down. 3 for 6 against a team that on the year gives up 72% in those situations.
Okay. And I already know the answer to this because you put it all over Twitter, again, on our joint account last night. But do you think Steve Addazio should be fired as Boston College football coach?
So he will not be fired. Let's be very clear about that, or I would be absolutely stunned if he was.
Because the fans are idiots. Sorry, I shouldn't say that.
Well, no, I don't think that's true at all. I just think because there's too much money involved, and at the end of the day, he can come back and say,
who would we get right now that would be a better guy to have than Steve?
No, I agree. I don't disagree that, and I, to be honest, I don't know what the market looks like well enough to speak to that. So, you know, but at the same time, you're not always you know, holding on to someone for too long just because it doesn't seem, you know, Les Miles isn't available anymore.
We said, you
know,
like you said 8 days, maybe it was the week before, but within the last 2 weeks, maybe I said it and you agreed, but the future for this program is incredibly bright between the talent we have on the team right now, and now we're starting to recruit, and it's taken a little longer than we all thought, but it's hard to come out of the dungeon that was the Spaz era. And now we have a mid ACC recruiting class, which is unheard of for BC over the past, I don't know, 15 years plus. So you combine the recruiting class with Daz's ability to develop players, and not even just Daz, but the coaches that he hires. You know, he has some of the best assistant coaches in the country. You lose everything by even talking about firing this guy. So
okay,
I think it's
right. So I agree, and like I said, he has done enough to get us out of the basement and to kind of get us back to respectability. But like I said earlier, if he's going to have in a given year, in order for us to win 10 plus games, that means we're going to be in 4 or 5 close games where his late game decisions are going to be the deciding factor. And I don't trust him to win the majority of those games. So
we're a quarterback away from being a 10 plus win program. We could go undefeated if we had Matt Ryan this year. And that's not a great example. I know Matt Ryan doesn't come around all that often, but I think we're a good quarterback away from all these problems going away.
Look, it's just, to me, this you know, we look at AJ Dillon and we look at the talent that we have, and it, to me, so far feels like we're just on the verge of pretty much wasting it with 8, maybe 9 win seasons if we get lucky. And to me, that's just not good enough, and it shouldn't be good enough to anyone to just kind of toil in this. I mean, even Tom O'Brien, who I think at the time everyone felt the same way about as not getting to the mountaintop, he still had a myriad of, most of his win seasons were 9 wins, and then his bad years were 8 wins. So
if we had a healthy Dillon, though, I mean, this season has not gone the way it has.
But first, Matt, the ACC is never going to be this bad, period. The ACC is never going to be this bad again. It's just not.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. So that does...
That's a huge factor.
Yeah, no, you're probably right. But we beat NC State with a healthy Dillon. We obviously beat Florida State, you know, with a healthy Dillon, right? So, I don't know. I to say that we're not even close, I think, is sort of a mischaracterization. We played...
We are close. Again, we absolutely are close. But again, to get... To that final step is the hardest step.
And so what's the solution then, if not firing the coach?
I would love to fire the coach.
Oh, you
would?
Honestly. Okay, so you do want to fire?
I said it's not going to happen, I would love to move on. I would love to say, look, thank you for getting us back to respectability. You're now a program that people want to come play for. You know, we've invested in the Fish Fieldhouse, all this stuff. We have talent. Let's find someone who can actually leverage this more effectively.
You sound like you after, was it Notre Dame last week or last year when we were 2-4, and then you said. I mean, you were with everyone with their pitchforks and said, get this guy out of here. And what do you know? He turned the program around and
he was
said,
a different coach.
And you said, Dez
was
my guy. And
no, he was
we're
a different
keep,
coach. In this,
Matt, we're going to keep doing the cycle. We're going to keep doing the cycle where every time we lose to someone, you're going to keep calling for his head. I expect everyone else to do it, but I didn't think you would be on this pitchfork.
Well, you know
train
what
so
I expected?
Quickly.
I expected you're the last person I would have expected to be okay with these 7-win ceilings. I thought that, you know, striving for greatness here, you'd like to actually win a championship one day. Again, he was a different coach in the second half of last year, and he has just reverted and decided again to go back to his I forget how to coach football. So that to me is it. It is what it is.
Because the timeout, again, name something else that he did wrong. The game plan, again, was the right game plan for this team. They should have won by at least 25 if they had executed properly, but they didn't.
Okay, who was execution on?
Anthony Brown. I see what you're saying. Yeah, I agree. It's fine. It's on the coach. But if you can get guys and they get a good recruiting class coming in, if you get the guys that can't execute out of there and you replace them with the guys that can, then we got a pretty bright future. You know, we got some quarterbacks Matt, I'm telling you, the game plan was there, and from a coaching standpoint, I didn't see that much wrong with it, and we should have won that game by a billion.
There is a reason that he has won 7 years, basically all of his years, except for the throwaway Jeff Smith quarterback year. And it is because at a certain point you regress to the mean, and he lives in the mean. So I think that's it. I obviously don't think we're going to convince you. You got kind of the Skip Bayless hat on here.
No, and I don't think
you
so.
Against the world a little bit.
Well,
but.
Yeah. I mean, we all got to go to extremes here because you and all your buddies on Twitter are calling for his head and all that. So
look, Matt, I just want to win, man. It's that simple. I want to win.
So name a coach that would do a better job. Name one.
I'm not in charge BC of the search committee, so I can't give you an answer off the top of my head.
Do you want Ryan Day? Is Ryan Day the solution?
I think Ryan Day would do a better job. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I do.
Got it.
I absolutely do.
Okay. All right. Let's move on.
I also don't think
you would come to
BC right now,
yeah. Yeah. Man, this does feel like, and we said pre-show, let's not turn this into this, but here we are. All right. So I guess the Eagles are what, 7-4 now, and we got to beat Q's, which we will. And we'll probably go 9-4 with a banged up Dylan. Not a bad season all in all, but, I don't know. Let's, put this game out of our memory and let's move on here, Matt.
Yeah, so I'm going to defer my dude this week. I have nothing. Nothing about yesterday was redeeming in any capacity whatsoever. So if you have a dude, go for it. Otherwise, we can continue on the road to negative town.
Yeah, I got a quick one. Just thank God we didn't beat Clemson last week.
if we beat Clemson,
and then followed it up with this the suck fest yesterday, that would have been way tougher than it is currently. At least this game didn't really mean all that much besides, you know, I guess, you know, a good bowl game, but I think we still have a chance to get one, right? So, but if this had cost us the ACC, and I think it would have been a different game. This was your classic, not that we won last week, but it was kind of a classic letdown game. So much hype was with College Game Day, and it was a weird week. It was really quiet. I think not even that many people listened to our pod as usual.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a barometer for anything, but we might have just had a shitty episode.
Maybe we just stink. I don't know.
Yeah, but it just seemed like no one really cared. Everyone said, you know, FSU is down and out. This one should be easy, and who cares? So, but I guess, you know, thank God this wasn't for the ACC, I guess, is my dude.
Yeah, that's one way to look at it, and you are right on that. In terms of bowls, I was so excited to spend New Year's Eve at Epcot in the Camping World Bowl, and that's now not going to happen. I think that if we win against Cuse, we'll get into the Tier 1 bowls, which at least gives us the opportunity of like the Nashville or the Sun Bowl.
I saw a couple in Nashville, which, you know me, I wouldn't hate that at all. So maybe this whole loss was a good thing, Matt. There's a silver lining for you.
Maybe, you orchestrated this whole thing. The reality is if we lose, as we'll maybe touch on it a little bit, but if we lose, we're going to Shreveport or Detroit. And if I have to watch this team in either of those two cities for another day in my life, that might just be the end of it for me.
Are we going to Shreveport?
Nope, fully not.
Will
they have a casino there.
Just pay for that?
No, they have a casino there, but I don't think we'd ever come back.
Look at all these silver linings
you're
coming up with here, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I agree. All right, so anyways, my pood, and I told you I would touch on it earlier, and this is, I guess, the last I'll talk about it for now, but not liking math. Everyone knows I'm a math guy, Matty Mathematics. The numbers never lie. That's kind of the bottom line here. So Adazio defended his decision to punt on 4th-and-1, saying you got to go with the numbers. Basically doubled down in this press conference, even though the numbers are completely wrong. So
Is that an exact quote? Did he say you got to go with the numbers, or did he say my running back's banged up and my quarterback can't complete a pass? So
well, he did not say that.
He did not say that. Got it.
He definitely did not say my quarterback can't complete a pass. So these credit Ben Thomas from the Heights, your favorite newspaper, for these numbers.
Oh, you're joining them, huh? Here we go.
Yeah, yeah. So going into the play with the ball on the 40 up 5, 4th-and-1 with 2 minutes and 52 seconds to go, we had an 87.2 win percentage. If we converted that play, if we went for it and converted, we would have a 96.6 win percentage. If we failed on 4th-and-1, we would have 74% winning percentage. And if we punted, it would have been 80%. So the risk there was really a 6% drop in win percentage, punting versus failing for it. And the upside was about 17%. Let me keep the numbers going here.
So Matt, before we even get to that, I'm concerned with the likelihood of converting rather than assuming we convert, here's what happens. What's the likelihood we would have converted?
So the likelihood, so on the year.
You can't do your math. It's not a vacuum, Matt. I know you're a math guy. You guys love vacuums.
But I'm not in a vacuum. I'm looking at the entire year. On the year, we were 71% converting on third or fourth down in less than 2 yards. And on the season, Florida State, in those exact same situations, has allowed conversions on 71% of those attempts. So the numbers are in our favor. And with the math, and Dylan has been healthy for the whole year. So it is the same.
Against thing. Holy Cross, yeah, fine.
No. We're not going for it on fourth and two against Holy Cross.
There was a couple we went for against Holy Cross, I think.
If we're in a fourth down situation against Holy Cross with AJ Dillon still in the game, there are bigger issues at play. Anyways, with the numbers the way they are, if we have a greater than 40% chance of converting, it is advantageous to us for us to go for it there, which I think clearly we do both in the individual game, if we want to talk about your vacuum, or if you want to talk about the season as a whole. So not liking the numbers as a math guy is a real affront. And you, by the way, you're an accountant. This should be an affront to you as well, because the numbers, as you know,
we don't do math in a vacuum in the CPA world, Matt. You know that.
Matt, people can lie, as you well know. People can forge documents. The numbers cannot lie.
Matt, my poot, it's a good segue into my poot here. My poot is you and all the Pitchfork fans out there. I already touched on it. What haven't I talked about here? Here's one. The people that, you could say Daz is a bad football coach, but there's a bunch of people out there, not a bunch, but enough to piss me off here. People that attack Daz's character with just completely baseless claims. Yeah, there was a couple guys that were like, yeah, if you really knew him, he's this huge asshole. And then, you know, someone follows up and says, oh, hey, why do you say that? Do you have an example? And it's always just silence. You just assume because he yells at refs. Oh, so does Nick Saban. So does Bill Belichick. Every good coach yells at the referees and people assume he's this shitty guy, you know, horrible person because of it. But the fact of the matter is the players love this guy. The coaches love this guy. Recruits love him. And as I said earlier, we're combining this with a pretty good recruiting pipeline. And I don't know, Matt, it's crazy and how sudden this fan base turns. And it's Twitter last night was wild, you included. So that's my poot. I wish we had loyal fans that understood, kind of long term that, you know, just because a cornerback got burned and we lost a bad game to Florida State, the entire 6 year tenure and beyond is not completely ruined.
You're absolutely right. It's 6 year tenure, five of which have been 7-6, and the other one was like 2 wins. So I'm absolutely with you. We are looking at the big picture here. Let's put this in the rearview mirror. We have, it's Thanksgiving week. So in that sake, let's be friendly, I guess, here. So I'll go back to the positive side of it. For my dude of the week, going completely off the football field.
I got a football one, so let me sneak that in.
Okay, yeah, please do.
Zach Allen, just can't say enough good things about him. Sure. He's been my dude of the week every single week. I know you guys are getting sick of it, but this guy just cannot get enough credit for what he does. He had 6 tackles, a sack, a QB hurry, a pass breakup, and a blocked field goal, by the way. And he's ginormous and to maintain, you know, that type of motor, especially when we're going 3 and out and the defense is back on the field, you know, every 3 minutes, the fact that he can keep it up to his degree is incredible. So, shout out Zach Allen or Sack Allen. Sorry. I called him Zach. That felt weird.
It's wrong.
But yeah, official dude of the week and, we'll talk, but next week, senior day and, I hope he just has an awesome day, and I hope he gets drafted top 10. Whatever NFL team takes him, it's going to be such a steal.
No, I'm definitely with you there. So my dude of the week, again, there's so many things wrong right now in the world. BC Hockey, for some reason, has decided to stop remembering how to play hockey. They're horrible. Hoops lost to IUPUI, which I didn't even know was a real school.
How do you say that as if, like, abbreviated? How do you say it so that it's not IUPUI?
You don't. Is it, so that's how you know.
Is it OOPI?
No, I think it's IUPUI.
You have to say the whole thing. Got it.
Yep. I don't think there's a choice. So the only bastion of light that we have right now is our girls, women's hoop team. Big win today on the road at Houston. They started 4-0. Going into today, Matt, they were top 5 in the RPI, which is absolutely outrageous. So they're, you know, at least that high after today. They got a new coach that's come in and completely changed the culture. So they were horrible for, you know, whatever, 5 years during the Johnson era. And shout out to the director of operations who is a listener. So they are my team and I'm fully on board for the women's hoops this year because I need some form of BC happiness. And by the way, I'm an alumni of the BC women's basketball team practice squad.
Everyone knows that. Hey, was that a Martin hire? The women's basketball coach?
This was. Yep.
Yeah. So, Matt, maybe we do that on the men's side and we're cooking with gas there. Don't you dare say it about football. Don't you dare. Shut up.
I will note, too, by the way, his other hire is the women's volleyball coach, and they have had like the best year in BC history so far.
There you go.
I'm a volleyball guy, so I can judge that hire and say that was a success as well. So he's 2 for 2, at least in the short amount of time we've seen the basketball side of things.
Are you a volleyball guy? Are you still doing that shtick?
I'll toss it around in the intramural leagues around New York sometimes.
If you're ever in Punta Cana with Matt, don't play beach volleyball with him because he doesn't
Matt,
play that
I had
well
like
in sand.
7,000 whatever the Dominican drinks was that day. So I'm throwing that one out there. I'm a very good volleyball player. I'm like 8 feet tall. People don't talk about this enough.
That's my Eagles in the Wild, was just how poor Matt played volleyball in Punta Cana. No, Matt, I don't have an Eagles in the Wild. Is that the next segment?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, next segment, Eagles in the Wild. I have this written down here. Hey, Matt, much like our football team on Saturday, specifically the offense, I'm only showing up for half the episode, so I didn't complete the Eagles in the Wild assignment.
That's well done. I'll also go similar to our football team yesterday. So Matt Ryan and Luke Kuechly had heartbreaking last-second losses today in the NFL. The Falcons lost on a last-second field goal by the Cowboys, and Panthers went for two with like 30 seconds left and didn't convert and lost. So pretty fitting on the BC spectrum for our football performances this weekend. Let's roll it into Dudeus Corpus.
Court is officially in session.
So what I want to start with, and I probably should have at least prepped you with this, but I kind of decided it 5 minutes before we started recording here, but I want to talk about just quickly, because I do want to get over this somehow. I want to talk about whether or not this is the most painful loss since we were freshmen at BC. So basically looking at the Spaz and the Daz era. So
I got one immediately that comes to mind, but why don't you go ahead and I'll
Fill in the blanks. So there's certainly more pathetic losses. So you look at like Wake 3-0. That was pathetic, and it will never get worse than that. The Spaz, Middle Schmittel against Duke, that was pathetic. And there's obviously been more resounding losses where we've gotten our doors blown off. Vatek 49-0 and plenty of other times these 10 years. But I think with the combination of we've never had our expectations this high, we've never had this much on the line in the decade, you know, going for 10 wins, going for a top 15 ranking, Camping World Bowl, all this good stuff. Talking, again, a potentially top 10 final ranking.
Do you want me to take this one because I was there, Matt?
I think I know what you're talking about, but again, I'm referring to the Spaz and Daz era.
Oh, so it doesn't count. Okay, all right. Well, okay. So,
because I agree with you. I think Syracuse is in the modern era. I don't think there's anything that comes close to that.
No, I was even going to say the Florida State in 07, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Right.
So everyone knows, you know, that the type of year that Matty Ice put together, it was coming off that awesome win down in Blacksburg on the road with the Hail Mary. And man, just talk about blowing it. A not great Florida State team comes to Chestnut Hill. I think they were, I don't know, 5-3. They're like a 500 Florida State team. Drew Weatherford, if that name rings a bell, just beat us and beat us bad. Our offense couldn't get going. And we went from number two in the country down to we didn't drop that bad. And then we followed up with a loss to Maryland. So in my mind, that immediately jumps to my mind. I was also at the Syracuse Diamond Ferry game. So those, and I know that it went outside the spectrum of what the question was, but those have to be the top two in my mind. The Florida State followed up with the Maryland loss, and then Syracuse.
That's certainly fair. I would definitely put both of those ahead of this. Again, I think though in this window, really just because it's the first time we've actually been good or been, you know, legitimately good in a decade. So overall, you know, cost us a huge amount. It's a waste of talent on this year. Tore down our high hopes and dreams. This to me was the most painful. Again, we're 24 hours removed from the end of the game, and this is sticking with me much more so than any other loss that I can remember. Which is a problem because I'm almost 30 years old, and I'm letting a bunch of 20-year-olds basically ruin me for 2 days. So that's something I need to work on, I guess. But this one really, really sucked for me. So guilty of being the most painful loss for me.
Got it. Wow. I don't know. We had nothing to play for, right? What was the difference between? And I get it. I shouldn't say that.
Because 10 wins.
It is, you know, an important game, right?
The top tier, the top bowl outside of Clemson. You know, so you get the top ACC bowl, which would have been cool.
Yeah, I guess 9-3 in a down ACC year versus 8-4. Is it all that much different? Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's to me, it was kind of. It obviously would have been great to finish the year strong and be 3-0 to end the year. That would be,
yeah. You talk momentum too, right? Yeah, you know, you talk about going into next year. If we finish 10-3,
right?
You know, we end up with a top probably 15, arguably even top 10 at the end of the year, depending on how the other teams shake out. You know, and who we play in the bowl game. So going into next year, there's a ton of momentum for the fan base, for the recruits. You know, on the recruiting cycle, it's huge. So yeah, it just the air was let out of the balloons and. Just a really dark time to be a BC fan today.
I'll give you one. Colorado State was almost worse. Colorado State was like, it wasn't almost worse, Matt, but that was one of the worst losses I've ever seen, right? And we were,
that sucked, yeah.
Were we undefeated? It was early on in the year.
No, we had already lost to Pitt that year. This was the USC year, was it not?
It was.
Or was this the year before?
Oh, had we already beat USC at that point?
Yes, I believe okay. we did. If it's the same year, it might have been the year before, but it all blends together at this point.
Okay. All right. So this wasn't a great one. We should have been
But that one did suck. That one did suck. But.
But the way we lost that one was pretty brutal, too, and not all that much difference from you know, how these guys just beat us. So.
Yeah.
Not great.
And then, Matt, I want to bring a special Thanksgiving edition into the court really quick. I just want to run through these. So I want to put all of these sides on trial for being over or underrated, and I want to get your guilty or innocent verdict. So over or underrated. So I guess if you say guilty, that means they are overrated. If you say innocent, they are underrated or just properly rated. So just real quick, I'll throw them out. You give me your verdict.
What are the options? Guilty or not guilty?
Guilty of being overrated or innocent, so they're just rated or they're underrated. Mac and cheese.
Oh, I thought we were doing football teams. Guilty.
Nope. Wait, you think mac and cheese is overrated?
No. Sorry, the other one.
Okay, so you're 0 for 1. Stuffing.
Oh, we're doing Thanksgiving. Okay, I thought we were doing something else Thanksgiving related. Stuffing's the best dish on the entire Thanksgiving situation there.
So, okay, we put sausage in our stuffing
in
our
house. No, you make it wrong then.
It's really good.
You don't want to overthink the stuffing. Stuffing's perfect as is. A lot of people try to stuff other stuff in there. But no, stuffing's good to me as is. Can I do a write-in candidate?
Yeah, please.
The garlic mashed potatoes, I love those, Matt. Guilty.
I like regular mashed potatoes so much. It's kind of similar, I guess, to the stuffing argument. It's like, I just kind of like to leave it as is.
Yeah. No, I disagree with you 100%. Anything else?
Cranberry sauce. Yeah, I got a couple. Cranberry sauce.
No thanks.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And then crescent rolls are the best food in the history of food.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far, but I think, you know, you didn't mention the dark meat.
Well, you mentioned last episode, two episodes ago.
Oh, the hooky episode.
Everyone knows you're
right.
A dark meat guy.
That's right. So,
that's all I got.
Okay, good segment there, Matt. I had one quick football thing. Is that allowed to talk football in Duty's Corpus?
Yeah, sure.
All right. So after BC lost, it was obviously, you know, we're no longer going to make the playoff. Well, I guess that was last week too. But I was watching the UCF game, and we talk about this all the time. But, you know, it's obviously advantageous for the playoff to expand to 8 teams and hopefully beyond for BC to have a shot eventually. Although this year probably needs to expand to, what, 32, maybe 64?
Yeah, 64 could be good, but yeah.
But UCF won handily, Washington State won handily. They kind of just put the beat down, and both of them are likely going to be left out of the playoffs. So to me, that increases the chances of us, you know, eventually making it. And like I said, probably not this year, but that's just a quick, what's the legal term for that? Badgering the witness there, Matt.
Tort. That's a tort.
Yeah, there's the tort.
So I think I kind of agree with what you're saying, but I think you need it to be a big football factory. Like, I think if Michigan was the one left out, you know, then that's huge. Or so I guess this year Georgia will have the most
undefeated 2-year UCF and Washington.
But no one
State.
Cares about UCF.
I think eventually, I think no one in the right mind wouldn't want UCF to have a shot at it, so that Alabama could blow them out.
Yeah,
and they shut up
and
forever.
Just shut them up, right? I'm pretty sick and tired of them. All right, no, I think this was a good court session overall. It's a little disjointed, but
yeah, it wasn't our best.
That happens. All right, we adjourning here?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get out of here. Court adjourned.
All right, let's dive into all things orange. I'm going to start with my fun fact, fitting because of the snowpocalypse that we had down here in Manhattan last week. Syracuse owns the largest snowplow in the world, so we could have used that down on the streets of the Big Apple on Thursday.
How about that, huh? Mine's similar. Q's, people forget Q's is responsible for inventing a lot of things. I'll give you a couple here, Matt. The dental chair was invented in Syracuse. The measuring device that tells the shoe salesman what your shoe size is. And then last one, the country's first drive-in window was also invented in Syracuse.
Huh. That's a pretty big three there, especially the shoe sizing one.
It's big time. Because how would you know otherwise, right?
You would have no idea. It would just be a guessing game.
That's right.
Cool. All right. So as we know, we've played Syracuse last year, so we already did the alumni. So as we've done throughout the year, we're doing our top six orange this year, or this week. So I guess we can kind of get a little creative here. Orange flavors, orange colors, whatever it might be. Do you want to go with the first pick here?
No, mine's a package deal. Why don't you take the first one?
Okay, so I'm going to go orange juice. I think it's pretty straightforward. It's the best drink, in my opinion, in the world, especially at breakfast time, but it's good all the time. I'm a Tropicana guy. I don't love Simply Orange, and I definitely like no pulp. I don't hate some pulp, but that's one of those things I don't like to admit because I think pulp people are kind of weird in general. But I don't hate it. And then I'll do a corollary here. It's not an actual pick, but orange Gatorade. So it's my number one flavor. And I think it's just because it has kind of that orange juice vibe. So like on a, if you're hungover on a Saturday or Sunday morning, an orange Gatorade is like the perfect marriage of the hydration and the electrolytes with the orange juice. So just a bang up combo there.
In junior year, Matt used to call himself the mayor of Mixie City. So he had a strong affinity for Gatorade and pouring some vodka in there and mixing it all together. And that's how he became the mayor of Mixie City.
Well, people forget that if you are hydrating while you are drinking, then you are just staying perpetually hydrated.
Right. I'm a Riptide Rush guy myself. I don't like to admit that. That's an unpopular take, but that's where I stand.
Do they even still make that?
Yeah, they do. At select CVS's, I think you can find those, Matt. So like I said, mine's a package deal. The first one I'm going to go with is The OC, which was a television show, just an absolute all-time show. All-time soundtrack. You guys know The OC, the Orange County. So it counts, right? Orange?
No, that's perfect.
You get it. Okay, all right, cool.
Yeah,
you were quiet. I was worried for a sec. Matt, are you a Marissa or a Summer guy?
So I'm a Laguna Beach guy. I didn't watch The OC.
Matt, that's a good segue to my next one. Laguna Beach, the real Orange County, is in my three hole here. talk about the just absolute electric reality television. Bunch of rich kids from California just having all sorts of fun, issues, and you had Steven, and hopefully you guys know that, otherwise I just sound like an idiot here, but you had Elsie, you had Kristen, just a loaded cast, and I mentioned this a couple episodes ago, which it's weird how often this one comes up, but I'm a big fan of the spinoff, the Very Cavalieri. Kristen's married to Jay Cutler. And they own a shoe store together or something like that. And it's just a real treat.
Yeah, no, I that was just a phenomenal show. My high school experience was very different than the one they portrayed on that television program. With my next pick, I'm going to go.
You kind of remind me of Talon a little bit.
Yeah, that's fair. I think I take that.
I didn't mean to compliment you.
Talon or Dieter?
Oh, you wish you were Dieter. You're a Talon guy.
I think Dieter's like the nice guy who's Steven's best friend. I was way more of a Dieter guy. Talon was a douchebag.
Well, yeah, but he was just kind of a nerd. So why don't you keep going? We're losing our adult listeners here.
So I'm going to go with we'll get our adult listeners back here with a little history. So the Orange Revolution was the 2004 Ukrainian Revolution. The reason that this one is noteworthy to me, so I coached youth basketball in high school, again, because I was not on Laguna Beach. Yeah, so that kind of actually goes well there. So we happened to just end up being the Orange team. And we happened to get a Ukrainian guy on our team. He actually was really good. I think he might have gone to BC after the fact. Anyways, the Orange Revolution became our rallying cry because, again, this guy was Ukrainian and we happened to wear orange. And we franchise tagged him. So he was on our team both years. We made back-to-back finals. So the Orange Revolution, the Ukrainian Revolution. I don't know, what side was what and what side we should be rooting for. Yeah, I don't know what side we should be rooting for in that. But as a basketball team we were phenomenal, and it was all based on the political revolution.
That kind of feels like a Gordon Bombay kind of rezoning the districts there. Mighty Ducks.
A little gerrymandering, yep.
There you go.
So I have one more pick.
Yes.
So I'm going to go with not having anything that rhymes with you. So everyone knows that nothing actually rhymes with orange, technically. There's one word in the dictionary. Well, there's one word in the dictionary ever. No, so that's not technically a rhyme. The only one ever in the dictionary is sporange, which is a very rare part of a fern. A fern, the fern plant.
Okay.
So that's what I got.
Nothing to add there.
I got some honorable mentions that could have squeezed in here, but I don't know.
So I spent a little bit of time in New Jersey for my sixth man. I'm going to give a shout out to West Orange, New Jersey, which is a town right outside of Newark. It's a fine town. I couldn't really tell you all that much about it, but I do know that's where Thomas Edison lived for a while and invented some stuff. Not as many things as when he invented stuff in Menlo Park.
And also not as many things as invented in Syracuse.
Which, get this. Well, that's a good point. Well, I'd say, Pete had the phonograph and many others.
Just electricity,
I guess
two things.
That one should have came first before two phonographs. Things, yeah. But anyway, it's also where Kyrie Irving grew up in West Orange. So pretty loaded city there. And then I just have the one honorable mention there, Matt. Orangutans.
Yeah, Tang was a good orange drink as well, too, which orangutan was the mascot for that. One of my honorable mentions, you kind of hit it, but there are at least 20 towns in the U.S. named Orange, which is cool. And then the Netherlands soccer team. So they're known as the Orange. They're always easy to root for. We have political rivalries as like a country with them. So the real reason I'm okay with them is because there's not like many people or people that we're friends with, that are from Netherlands the way it is like with Italy and Germany, where everyone acts like they've lived in that country for their entire life and, you know, become these huge fans over being, you know, fans of Clint Dempsey and the boys. So Netherlands to me is very neutral. When they win, it's like if the Texas Rangers win the World Series, I just don't have to hear from their fans, which I'm cool with.
Arjen Robben always kind of rubbed me the wrong way.
That's fair. Yeah, I'm not going to fight you on that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. All right. What's up next? I think it's tailgate ability.
Matt, can I have a rule question on this? Am I allowed to go less than zero on the tailgate ability this week?
I'm single digits myself.
Yeah.
I'll get it kicked off here. I don't have much here. I don't know. Whatever. This game's always Thanksgiving weekend, right? And we've gone a few times. I remember one year in particular. It was probably 2014. It's probably 2014 where we were on Shea and it was like 10 degrees. It was the coldest day of the year. And I don't know, we had like a small crew. No one was there. Shea was empty. And we just kind of sat in the car the whole time with our buddies. And it was kind of miserable. So obviously, you know, it would be a lot bigger deal if A, we didn't suck now, and if Q's had done anything productive against Notre Dame. But that all said, it's senior day, and we have a lot of seniors that deserve the support, kind of deserve a packed house. I know they're not going to get one. But you think about all the seniors we have. You got Zach Allen, you got Sweeney, you got Jeff Smith, Chris Lindstrom, Strahan, Harris, Dennis, Mikey Walker. That's a lot. We might be rebuilding next year, Matt.
Not great.
But with that all said, I'm not going, and I don't know. If you're going, God bless you. I have 6.8.
Wow, yeah, you're right on the money with me. So again, right off a deflating loss, I am just like so down on this year now. I just want to fast forward to bowl season, hope it's in a good spot. Thanksgiving weekend, the last thing I want to do is rush out of the house early on a Saturday morning to drive 90 minutes to Brighton. Cuse is still top 20, which is cool, but also off a loss, so that takes this thing out of it. It's a noon kickoff, which is just terrible. 42 degrees and sunny, so I guess that's okay for a late November game. It is still a big game for bowl placement. Need a win to lock in tier one and avoid, you know, at least the significant possibility of a Detroit Shreveport or lower. And again, the seniors, as you mentioned. But with that said, I'm going 6.3. God help you. That's kind of all I can say.
Yeah, nothing to add there. That said, you should go. Everyone should go if you're planning to go.
Sorry.
Support the guys.
We need a good home field advantage here because we can't play well on the road. So if it feels like a road environment, we're in big trouble.
That's right. All right. So let's talk football. I don't have a whole lot here, Matt.
Matt, so I was just going to say, I'm going to leave this segment all to you because Syracuse has been your number one team all season. I am sorry about Dungy. He got banged up. I don't know if he's going to play. But beyond that, I'm going to leave the rest of it to you, and then I will jump in once you're ready for a prediction.
Yeah, I just did a quick Google search, and it sounds like he's for sure not going to play.
Okay.
So it's an upper body injury.
So Tommy DeVito, is he the one coming in?
Yeah, exactly. So Dungy got knocked out pretty early against Notre Dame last week, and just to get ahead of it, I know I've been saying since day one that Cuse was going to knock off Notre Dame. That was fully contingent on Dungy being healthy. He was obviously the X factor. So that one's officially, what's the word?
That's voided.
It's a good job.
Are you gonna refund people or no?
Yeah, so I tried on my bookie and he did not think it was voided. Unfortunately.
It's funny how that works out.
Yeah. But these guys, I'll tell you what, they're a completely different team without Dungy. Tommy DeVito barely had 100 yards passing, threw a couple picks. They had like 70 rushing yards. These guys could not do anything against the Irish. And maybe it's the fact that Notre Dame's actually a good football team, but I don't know. I think their O-line is suspect. They have a lot of weaknesses. They do put up a lot of points, but again, that's the Dungy offense, and their defense has been bad all year. So you take out their X factor, I think we can do a lot of damage. Like you said, it's at home. We should, you know, the seniors should come to play. Everyone should be motivated. There's no reason we can't get out of here with a big win. Syracuse is the fakest ranked team of all time, and I don't see this as any type of – the line hasn't come out yet, but it will be fascinating to see where Vegas puts this. I would have, I don't know, without Dungy, it's probably, in my mind at least, Eagles probably giving 3.5, but I couldn't even tell you. But
yeah, 3.5 would be my guess as well.
BC, you know, assuming everyone's healthy or people are getting healthy and Dylan plays and all that, we should win by 2 or 3 scores here, Matt.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. The only thing I'll throw in is potentially the last game we could see with Dino Babers on the head coach of Syracuse, I guess, besides the bowl game, if he sticks around for that. But oftentimes they're poached before that. But he's going to be very high on the list for a lot of vacancies this year. Obviously, Les Miles is now off the market, and Jeff Brohm, at least rumored to be going to Louisville. So Dino is probably, you know, right on that next list of people that are going to be giving phone calls out. So we'll be interesting to watch what happens. I love the coaching search part of the year. It's a very fun time to be a college football fan. But no, I'm with you. I really don't think they're that good. I think, you know, I think we've said all along that we don't know how good we are either, but I think that we are more legitimate, much more legitimate team than Syracuse is. I think we come out with the chip on our shoulder after the deflating loss of last week, and we want to, you know, end on a high note and avoid, like I've said many times now, avoid heading back to Detroit or Shreveport. And with the seniors, there's a lot on the line. And I think, you know, I do think on Thanksgiving week, it helps a lot to be, you know, the home team here. You know, I think you can have a little bit more of a, you know, normal week and still have, you know, whether the guys who are local or just kind of a team dinner on campus, whatever it is, I think that will play a little bit of a factor. I'm going to go 28-17, but it's just miserable for all parties to watch both us and Cuse. Like pretty much all of our games have been this season.
Yeah, I'm kind of right there with you. Well, not really, but it's just a good transition line there, Matt. The Cuse offensive line, like I said, is absolutely terrible. Last week, DeVito was sacked 6 times, threw 2 picks. So I'm thinking Allen and maybe the reemergence of Lucas Dennis on Saturday would be great. But I think both of those guys in particular, secondary in general, should have a big game to kind of send everyone out with a W on senior day. I got BC 32, Cuse 12, which I know is kind of a Chris Berman score. But I'm thinking without, and that's no Dungy. Without, if Dungy's in there, it's going to be like a 54-53 shootout. But assuming no Dungy and assuming our guys are healthy, I got BC 32, Cuse 12. It's never in question. Eagles take care of business and we're on to Nashville.
You know how much I would just absolutely kill to have a game finally never in question this year. So I'm praying to God you're right, but I'm not going to hold my breath. Look, like I said, this is as painful a loss as we've had in a very long time. And I'm hopeful as the week goes on, it will get easier, but who knows? I guess thank God for Thanksgiving to take my mind off this team for a little while. I'm not sure if talking about it all over again made me feel better or worse, but hopefully listening to this episode will be therapeutic for some of you. I honestly don't know, but hope for the best there. As always, follow us on Twitter, Insta, at Fourth and Dude. Plenty of commiserating going on over there this past weekend, and hopefully we'll have some more to be positive about next Saturday. And follow our friends, BC247, at Eagle Insiders, for good insight into everything that went wrong and how the heck we can pick up the pieces. They'll give you much better football analysis than kind of our just negative tweets after a couple cold ones.
Your negative tweets.
Fair. Look, all we can do at this point is try to move on and get a win so we don't end up with another New Year's in 30 degrees Louisiana. But honestly, who knows what to expect out of this team anymore. Matt, do you still have to say the closing line this week?
I don't know. It kind of rings hollow this week. I'll still say it because I don't know what else to say. Can you just tee me up for it?
Yeah, Matt. Is this a good or not a good day to be a dude?
Matt, it's always a great day to be a dude.
Dude.